you got to make the morning last, just kicking down the cobblestones.
Good morning to all of you in Shasta County in this gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous spring day. And particularly to our friends from UCLA, that being Upper Cottonwood and Lower Anderson. This is Henry Cuenca in downtown Reading, pinch hitting today for Dr. Trudy Pratt. I welcome you all joining us through the internet, through our website. The focus of my show is interviewing guests who hold and live passions. These manifestations of passions are demonstrated in countless ways. We want people who live for a cause with a compelling sense of purpose. While maintaining interest in what people do in their lives, my true curiosity is understanding why things are done. In other words, what is the fuel driving internal senses that produce vigorous results? In many cases, passions and purposes are driven quietly, subtly, and unseen, but yet significant impact to others and society as a whole. This is what my show is all about. And my first guest today is Catherine King, a local attorney. And Catherine, good morning and welcome to the show.
Good morning. It's a real privilege to be here this morning.
Well, thank you. Catherine, I know that you've been in the community practicing law for some time. And I'd like to know just right off as to what is it that, what was the seed that drove you to two things, one being attorney, and number two, locating your business and your life in Reading?
I became an attorney 21 years ago at this point, and born and raised in the Bay Area, but we moved up north here to be a part of this community and attend a church here, Bethel, and raise our kids in the country as opposed to the Bay Area life. So, yeah.
And Catherine, what is it that led you to being an attorney?
Justice. A real passion for justice and seeing things that are wrong made right at whatever level I'm able to impact that.
Did you have coaching at home about your ultimate career life or vocation in life?
I was raised in a big thinker home, shall we say. My father really pressed me hard to say, you'll be a professional one way or another, doctor, lawyer, or Indian chief. Initially I thought I would be a doctor and chose law, ultimately. But, early on that was the dream.
And you went to law school where?
At Hastings in San Francisco.
San Francisco. Good for you. And you found your way to Reading just how?
6 years ago, we were living in Sonoma and elected to go north. Most of my family lives in Arizona. I said, I'm not leaving California. So we decided to come north here and love it up here.
Well, good for you. Welcome.
Thank you.
I know that being an attorney, there are limitless fields that attorneys' disciplines can take them in. And I'm curious to know just why it was, how it was that you ended up representing members of society that fall on bad or difficult financial times. How did you decide to devote your practice to helping those going through bankruptcy?
Well, interestingly enough, I am also a real estate broker, and my father's a real estate developer, so I've always been somewhat focused on in the real estate arena, and because of the mortgage banking crisis, it really opened up my eyes to the challenges that people face given the collapse in that area. And so I started pursuing different resources. I went to Max Gardner's bankruptcy boot camp, and he really highlights different ways that you can maximize your position and wind through the challenges through bankruptcy when you've got a mortgage at issue. And so it was from that perspective in the whole foreclosure defense arena that I really sort of made my entrance into the bankruptcy arena more aggressively.
So were you a broker first of all, and then you got your law degree?
No, simultaneous.
Okay, simultaneously.
Yes.
So you did double duty.
Well, once you have a JD, you can become a broker fairly easily.
Yeah, so. Probably would imagine so. You can do a lot of things as a JD.
Well, yeah, quite a few.
What is it that you find the most fulfilling part of your professional profession?
my quick response to that is I have incredible access to people's hearts.
Wow.
I love that. I just love that.
Can you expound on that?
When I sit across the table from a client, I know that they're facing really challenging times. And typically when I ask them, how are you? I say, not so good. I said, well, my policy is you don't get to leave my office until you're smiling.
Wow.
So, really just trying to find out, you know, obviously we know what's on the table in terms of negative numbers and this, that, and the other. But ultimately, there's a way you can pursue life that can bring joy to others. And so it's my goal to bring hope and joy and peace at some level every time I meet with people. And don't let them get out until they do.
Well, I've known attorneys all my life, and I've never quite heard any of them state why they do what they do the way that you have. We're going to take a quick break here and listen on, and we'll be back to chat more with Catherine.
What do you look?
Welcome back. Again, this is Henry Cuenca from KCNR 1460 on your radio dial in Redding, California. For those of you wanting to send us an email, give us a call, please do. We're speaking with Catherine King, a local bankruptcy attorney that has some really unique passions in dealing with families who are facing very, very challenging times, particularly in this economy. And Catherine, you were saying that the motivation, the passion for you in meeting with your clients is that you want to see a smile on their face. Could you tell us more about that?
A lot of times people are really focused on the negative side. They're losing their house, they've got huge amounts of debt or different challenges from that perspective. And I try to lead them through our conversation to a place of looking at what they do have and how this is an opportunity for financial planning strategy and how they can streamline and simplify their life so that there's greater fulfillment in what they do have and rebuild from that place.
So clients that come to see you really get a dual benefit. One is that they get their legal matters handled appropriately, but it sounds like you plant some seeds in their mind about life and the challenges that all of us have during life. Is that correct?
I really try to do that, yeah. I feel like the outward manifestation of people's lives, whether they're in bankruptcy or just facing difficult times in whatever arena of their life, is sometimes a reflection of what's on the inside or what's maybe missing from the inside. And so trying to take avenues to look at what might be missing and encourage them in that direction.
Are there any common characteristics, aside from the financial deficiencies that exist with clients, are there other things that in a general characteristic perspective that you see that's missing in these people's lives?
Well, fundamentally, it's all how we think. And what we think leads to external realities. Mm-hmm. And so just trying to fine-tooth comb what people's thoughts are that have led them to the place that they're in. Obviously, there's external market conditions that have put them in particular places, but those market conditions were created by collective thinking, if you will, a society that has focused on greed and acquisition and all of that has led us to this sort of financial crisis nationally. And so where do we take personal responsibility for that and, realign our lives with different values?
So it sounds like people get some really solid fundamental principles and values coaching along the way. Do most of your clients respond to this type of dialogue that you initiate with them?
I really try to tailor my comments and discussion with people according to what I'm seeing mm-hmm. that's going on, based on what they say.
Certainly.
I see certain things. I've always been called an exhorter.
An exhorter?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
For better or worse. But people find that I'm not only encouraging, but I'll challenge them when I see something that I feel like has led them to a place that they could improve on rather than stay stuck somewhere.
It's I would gather that you do impact critical thinking in a lot of these people to recount some of the steps or missteps that maybe they have taken in their in prior years. It sounds like to me that you probably resonate pretty effectively with these people for them to kind of take inventory of the way they think and the way they act and those kinds of things, and maybe send these folks back to doing some really critical thinking about themselves and life in general.
That is my hope when I meet with people, just to really open their eyes to whatever I feel like they can handle in that moment. And it's been a real privilege to meet with people. I've just been very, very blessed by the opportunity to access hearts. And one of the things that sort of developed out of that is I'm starting to teach a class in that direction, just to help people go a little bit deeper and look at some of the values and thought patterns that have produced certain results in their lives, and also releasing a book soon about that as well.
Yes, I know a little bit of your course, your book, called Principles of Prosperity, which has a very, very high-tech marketing subject containment. It sounds really good. Can you tell us about, you know, the principles of prosperity and what it is that you're trying to do through this course?
Well, it's definitely not a get-rich-quick scheme at all.
So money is not a motivation.
No, it's not a motivation in this course, although there's an element of that. Prosperity necessarily includes financial aspects, but ultimately we need to look at prosperity from a different place, and that is, you know, what is the fullness and richness in life beyond just what we can acquire, and the props that we have that demonstrate that we are prosperous in the American sense of the word. And I think that we've lost as a nation a lot of our sense of prosperity in a truer sense, a heart sense.
Well, I think that is just terrific, and I'm going to go back and just ask, just where did you get this idea of creating prosperity, principles of prosperity? How did you touch on that?
Ultimately, because a lot of people coming through my office, I just see consistent things that underlie how they arrived at the place that they're at. And being an exhorter, I want to challenge them and encourage them to a place where they can rethink their values and ideas, and perhaps find a new path into as they rebuild their lives from bankruptcy.
I would think, Catherine, that a lot of your clients really remain lasting acquaintances, possibly even good friends. Is that true?
I try to cultivate a longer-term relationship with clients than the typical four-month bankruptcy track in a Chapter 7 or Chapter 13s or five-year plans, so they're stuck with me for a while. But
and I would assume by the same token that you've seen the fruits of the teachings, or at least the initiation of new way of thinking to these people. I would assume that you have seen the effect of this. Positive effect.
I have. Interestingly enough, I ran into a client last weekend, I guess it was, and they shared with me it had been about a year since they had been discharged in bankruptcy, and had a phenomenal testimony of the transformation in their life. And it just really blesses me to hear how people's lives have changed significantly. I mean, they're telling me the story with tears streaming down their face. That said, we couldn't be here without you. Thank you so much. And so those kinds of things are just, hey, I'll show up at work any day of the week to see that happen for people.
Yeah, I can, all of us in here are developing little tears. I probably should bring Kleenex, box of Kleenex for all show. But I just commend you for what you're doing and the approach that you're doing. Life has evolved where we seem to be just a transaction for people. And just like running a credit card through a processor, people just don't stop and really connect with people in whatever lines of work or we do. And it's just so unfortunate. So I'm really touched by the fact that here you are, a professional attorney, and reaching out in a social sense, and consider that a true blessing that you're able to affect people and change people's lives. And that, quite honestly, is what this show is about, in talking to folks. So could you tell us any specific and other specific circumstances that where you feel that you really positively demonstrated the effect of what you do?
Really, it's my clients who demonstrate the positive effect. I mean, just the testimony and the transformation in their lives is tremendous. And, you know, I get texts, I get emails from all different kinds of people saying, you have no idea the hope and peace I feel. I was actually able to sleep without drugs last night, or different things like that. I have peace. I'm not fighting with my husband. We're just amazing things. And it's just, you know, I mean, that'll get you out of bed in the morning for sure.
So I know that you've been working on your principles of prosperity, and I know that we're all really interested in learning about that, and we're going to get to that as soon as we come back from the break. Thank you. In our 1460 on your dial in Redding, California, and we're talking to Catherine King, a local bankruptcy attorney who not only corrects financial woes, but sounds like she does a little bit fixing of people's minds and their souls. Catherine, could you tell us a little bit more specifically about principles of prosperity, the course objective, and who the profile, the folks that can use this information?
Well, the class was developed really ultimately for my clients, but it is open to the public, and if anyone wants to come, they're absolutely welcome to come. But all of us, in different ways, have things that impact our ability to hold the prosperity in our lives. I equate it to two different baskets, and one will hold stuff. The other one, if it's broken or has holes in it, will not hold anything. And so we're leaking in different areas of our lives. If you're in bankruptcy, you're leaking finances, at least among other things. If you're in a divorce, you have some relational holes that need to be fixed. And so the whole purpose of the class is really to take a deeper look at where have holes developed in my life such that I'm not able to hold the prosperity that I'm intended to live in.
And this course is starting, and your book is starting when?
Monday night.
Oh, this Monday night.
It is.
Terrific. And could you share with us, you know, how people can find out about the course and sign up for the course?
It's on. It's posted on the website under the blog. The website is kinglawbankruptcy.com, and there's a blog page there, and it talks about principles of prosperity. The class will be held at 1139 Hilltop Drive, and we're starting at 7, and it goes for an hour and a half or so. And you're welcome to check out the website and sign up there, and or give us a call at the office, 221-2640.
Okay, so again, those seeking information about the course in Principles of Prosperity can log on to your website, kinglawbankruptcy.com, or they can call your offices at 221-2640. And you're located here in Redding where?
On Hilltop.
Hilltop Drive. Is that, 1139 Hilltop Drive. Well, this sounds like a terrific course, and the course is going to run for how long?
It'll just be for 3 weeks, and at the end of that 3 weeks, you'll certainly have a lot of tools to draw from to really look at some of the deeper things in life and where you want to go. And for those who successfully complete the class, simply by attending, you'll get a copy of my book that I'm releasing near the end of the month called Paths to Prosperity.
Well, that sounds like a very, very exciting topic, and I'm interested in attending your course and reading your book, to be honest with you.
Well, you're welcome to come.
I asked you what fuels you, and you said knowing and calling your destiny is really what gives you the passion to do the things that you do. Could you share those innermost thoughts with us?
I think ultimately it's the thing that when people are fueled or impassioned or driven by anything, it really comes out of a source of identity. I don't think we can get excited about something that is not really what our heart is created for. And I think ultimately, if you know what your identity is, you can go in amazing places and directions and impact in people's lives.
Walk on mountains.
Absolutely.
Well, Catherine, I want to thank you very, very much for being on our show. And I'm very moved, as all of us in here are, and know that many of our listeners are also moved by what you do. So, I want to thank you very much for appearing, and we're going to take a break, and we're coming up with our second guest, who incidentally is probably known by 100% of Shasta County. In any event, it's Frank Tona from Crown Camera. So we'll talk to you after the break.
Do you?
KCNR 1460. And again, this is Henry Cuenca in downtown Reading. And my second guest here, I had mentioned, is perhaps known by everybody in Shasta County. You have no idea, Frank, how many times I have talked to mention your name, and everybody says, oh, I know him. Well, Frank Tona is the general manager of Crown Camera. And so he's been with the company for a lot of years. Frank, welcome to today's show.
Thank you, Henry. Glad to be here.
Well, thank you.
And I don't know everyone, but
well,
we try real hard.
Pretty much I think you do. Frank, I know that you're very passionate about photography and helping people interested in these areas. How did this all come about?
How did I become passionate about photography? Well, it all started when I received an old camera when I was a kid, 9, 10 years old. And
they had cameras then.
Oh, yeah. They had film cameras then. And used the camera, took pictures of my family. I'm the oldest of 10, so I had lots of subjects to play with and practice on. And next thing you know, I took a class in high school, and we had an award ceremony, and surprise, surprise, they gave me a little medal for photography. And I thought, well, my gosh, somebody really believes in me. And that was a big step for me. And next thing you know, I'm in the photography business.
So how old were you then, Frank?
When I got my pin in high school, you know, probably 15, 16 years old, something like that.
Pretty young guy.
Yeah.
So essentially, the die was, in retrospect, was cast
long time ago.
Back when you were 15, 16 years old. And so you are now the general manager of Crown Camera. And why don't you tell us about Crown Camera and some of the things that you do?
Well, I am the store manager at Crown Camera. We have a diverse team that helps us take care of customers' photographic needs. So we sell cameras as well as do all kinds of work with people's photographs, everything from, you know, birthday parties to funerals to we also do video transfers, and you know, we just offer a ton of services. If it has anything to do with photograph, we offer something to take care of that.
Mm-hmm. I would say that the recognition name of Crown Camera is pretty high in this area, and the company's been here for how many years?
Since 1957, so we're on our 54th year.
Wow.
It's been here for a long time. Gary Engel, the owner of the store, started it back in 1957, basically by himself, and we've had other camera stores come and go, and we've had big boxes come and go, and Crown Camera's still here.
Mm-hmm. And Gary is still active in the business?
Gary is there every single day.
So he's active in the business.
He stays active in the business.
Uh-huh. And how do you describe your ability to sustain the business for over 50 years? As you know, the average term of a business life is, at least a corporation, is just over 10 years, and businesses is more like 30%, I believe. So you've sustained something over the years that has allowed the Crown Camera to grow and serve a broader and broader base. So what are the key attributes that makes Crown Camera so stable and viable?
I would have to say that the biggest reason is that we take care of our customers as if they were our own family. That's what Gary has built into us as employees. So all of the staff at Crown Camera knows that when a customer walks in the store, our number one goal is to satisfy their needs. And whether that is a joyful event or a non-joyful event, we really do want to sell you a camera that's going to take care of your needs. We're going to teach you how to use the camera. We're going to take care of your photographic needs for anything that you may have that requires work. So as we progress, as we have progressed in the store, we have adapted to the changes in the industry, which there have been tons of. And the part of the reason why we're still here is that we also belong to a huge buying group that allows us to buy as if we were a huge store instead of just one single store.
So that lets you, through this buying group, I presume, allows Crown Camera to offer competitive prices against big box operations and so forth and so on.
Yeah.
Well, that's terrific. Do you have a goal like Catherine, our prior speaker, of getting a smile on everybody that walks into your store?
You know, we want to recognize everyone when they walk in the door, and we want to make sure that when they leave that we've satisfied their needs, and we try real hard. You know, there are things that we can do for anybody with regards to their photographic prints, old negatives, old slides, old movies, which, by the way, you know, you have to be aware that anything that you have that's old is not going to last forever, and that you should be doing a consistent backup on a regular basis, just so you can make sure that lasts into the future.
Frank, I want to ask you, maybe you can think about it because we're going to go on break, but I'd like to ask you some, you know, of all the thousands of experiences you have had in serving your customers, you had to have had some really unique emotional situations that have occurred over the years, and I want you to think about that, and let's take our break, and we'll come back and hear what you have to say.
Perfect.
R1460 on your AM dial. Again, this is Henry Cuenca, and I'm interviewing Frank Tona, the general manager of Crown Camera, the iconic business in Shasta County. And I had asked Frank before our break to tell us a story that sticks out in his mind, that maybe had influenced him even more about photography as a career. And apparently, Frank, this happened back when you were a teenager as well. Could you tell us about that?
Sure. It's funny how things happen, and you find yourself 20, 30, 40 years later. 40 years ago, after I graduated from high school, my dad died. I, being the oldest of 10, I went and grabbed all the photographs and put them in a little brown paper bag, and I can remember this like it was yesterday, and took it down to a little portrait studio in the town that I was living in. This is in Southern California 40 years ago. And dropped it off and asked to have copies made because I wanted to make sure that all of my family would get copies. And one thing leads to another. You get busy, you know, the funeral, and, went back to pick up the photographs, and they didn't have them. And went back.
You mean they didn't have them like
they didn't have them? They didn't have them. They got lost. And that was huge to me because those were the only photographs I had of my dad. So while at the time you didn't think about, you know, that was going to have an impact on your life, I can look back now 40 years later and I can say, obviously, that had a huge impact. So when a customer walks into the store, and I'll give you an example, a customer walks in the store and opens up his wallet and says, I'd like to make a copy of this photograph of my wife. And this happens on a regular basis. A customer will walk in the store, start to give you a story about the photograph. And a lot of times it's very emotional. In this case, the man had been married for, 43 years. His wife had just died. This photograph of his wife from 43 years ago was still in his wallet in the same spot for 43 years.
My goodness.
Of course, it was in horrible condition because it was still in that plastic, that little plastic folder. He just moved it from wallet to wallet, and the picture was still there. And he wanted it restored, and 8x10 of it, so he could pass that on to his children. Those are the kind of projects that we get. And in this particular case, we were able to scan the photograph and go even further and restore it back to its original condition. And, of course, he comes back, you know, a week, 2 weeks later to pick up the photograph and immediately bursts into tears.
Wow.
And the emotion of that brings me back to, you know, how I felt about, you know, losing my pictures, 40 years ago. And these are the kinds of things that happen to us on a regular basis. Customers walk in and lay down a photograph. Look at this great photograph that I took, you know, of the sunset, of the bridge, of my children's birthday party. And we get, you know, people that walk in, they're not smiling. It's a picture of their mom and their dad, and the dad just died, and they want to make an enlargement of this photograph to go, you know, as part of the pictures for the funeral. Or any of a number of things, but we get to hear the stories. A lot of times they're joyful, wonderful, joyful stories of birthday parties, and a lot of times they're not as joyful, but we bring a smile and a tear to people's faces when we are able to solve the problem.
Well, you share that with Catherine, our Kath. that's a wonderful story. Now tell me, let me take you back to your teenage years when you took all the family photos in and they were lost. They were never retrievable?
No. They were gone. They're gone. Over the years, I've been able to, you know, get a picture here and a picture there that other relatives have had that were similar to those. But that brown bag full of photographs and negatives and slides disappeared.
So undoubtedly, they just got tossed in the wrong stack.
Yep. They, you know, I'm sure it ended up in a trash can and got thrown away. And I went back, you know, month after month after month for, you know, several years, and they never showed up.
You know, what a tragedy. That's a family tragedy. I mean, you hear of folks that are leaving the house as a result of a fire, and what is it the first thing that people do when they're going to evacuate the house, following, making sure that all the residents and the animals are out? What is it that they go for?
You know, we were part of the Jones Valley fire, you know, some 10 years ago, 11, 12, 10, 11 years ago. And my wife and I had to bundle up the animals and the kids. And the next thing we grabbed was all the pictures on the wall and all the photo albums. And that's what most people will do, and I want to remind people that today, where are your pictures? Do you know where they are? And more importantly, do you realize that probably, if you've only been taking pictures for 10 years, it's probably in your computer, so you'll probably want to grab that computer these days.
Yeah, for sure. Things have changed. Frank, you've been in the photography business for a lot of years, and I know that you're a really techie guy and that you lead the store in the technology aspects of things. I know that you have reached some pretty high-level accomplishments in terms of some of your technology with Twitter and Facebook that ranks, I would say, nationwide in terms of promoting the business and photography. Can you share those stories with us?
Sure. Facebook is a social networking program out there that lots of us are taking advantage of. And Crown Camera, almost 3 years ago, started a Facebook page. At this time, we're nearly 2,500 fans, and that is a big number. If you look at camera stores throughout the United States, there's big box, billion-dollar stores out there that have Facebook pages that don't have 2,500 people on them.
Wow.
There are also lots of camera stores out there that don't even have a Facebook page, and we do, and we share daily information on that page that hopefully is useful to the photographic needs of people. So every day there's three or four pieces of information that come out from our Facebook page, and people comment back and share their photographs and, you know, laugh and cry and smile, and that is a big accomplishment. And Twitter is very similar in the same way in that we have lots and lots of Twitter fans across the nation. So, you know, it's just something that when I mentioned earlier, you know, you have to adapt and you have to change as the industry changes. These are some of those things, and we were on the bandwagon early for digital cameras, and we were on the bandwagon early for Facebook and Twitter.
And obviously, you've led many of these charges, and so I think that we're really proud to have an owner of yourself, a person that is in such a such a position to make a difference, not only for Crown Camera's business, but to interface with the lives of people in the community. So I think I'm very happy to know you. So we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back and wind up our show with a couple of more questions for Frank. And thank you.
Today.
Welcome back. This is KCNR, 1400 AM, and we're 1460 AM, and we're here with Frank Tona from Crown Camera. And Frank, you've been in the business so long that you've seen enormous changes that has taken place in photography, from print to now digital. What...
I'm so old that the dust is still on... You know. I've been with Crown Camera for 20 years, and I've been privileged to be at Crown Camera for that long a time, and I have seen some dramatic changes in the industry, as you were discussing. When I started, there were no digital cameras. There were film cameras, and I had dark hair, and now I have gray hair. I mean, you know, it's a long time, and a lot of things have changed. Primarily, we've moved from the film industry to the digital industry, and that was a pretty dramatic change.
And what have we lost, if anything, during that enormous transition?
We've lost the what people are not doing is that they're not making photographic prints anymore. And we had kind of discussed this in the interview prior to the show. What impact does that have? Well, you get the instant gratification of seeing your pictures on a digital camera. That's clearly a wonderful thing. You get to take the picture over and over and over again until you get it right, which is clearly a wonderful thing about digital photography. But once that instant gratification is over, you're done. You drop the file into your computer. You never make a photographic print of it. It doesn't go up. The picture doesn't go up on the wall, or doesn't go up on the refrigerator of your kids. And I believe that impact has yet to be measured and will be much, much larger 20 years from now when we realize that we didn't do anything with those photographs.
You know, it used to be that you'd pull out a picture, you'd pull out your wallet, and you'd show, well, this is my wife, these are my kids. And you don't see that happening anymore.
Now you bring out your digital phone and you scan through, you're rubbing your finger over the screen and saying, here's my wife and here's my kids. Those are your pictures. It's huge. It's huge. I don't know that people recognize that a photographic print of a child has a huge impact on a child. When you make a photograph and you put it up on the refrigerator and that child sees that photograph, that builds their self-esteem.
Interesting.
And that is something that is not taking place today. Most of us are not, I'm not saying that nobody makes photographs anymore. Obviously, people do in lots of different ways. But in reality, they don't make, those photographs. They don't put them in frames. They don't put them in photo albums. They're doing them differently. They're sharing them on Facebook. You know, they're sharing them in different ways on their phone and, you know, so on and so email. But that photographic print is still pretty important, and I think it's something that we need to get back to. Mm-hmm.
And so what you're saying is that there is a lack missing for, you noted specifically, children who don't see their pictures on the refrigerator or sitting on the counter. And so how is it that you feel specifically the void is created by not seeing those types of things, or the children not seeing those types of things?
Well, again, it's a kind of a self-esteem issue. When a child sees a picture of himself or herself next to their parents in a family photograph, that gives them a sense of place. It gives them a sense of a knowledge that they belong to a greater picture. It opens up their hearts to the knowledge that they are part of a family unit, and when they don't see those photographs other than a quick flash on the back of the digital camera, it does affect them. And we've had that. You and I grew up with pictures on the refrigerator and pictures on the wall and photo albums to share. And I can guarantee you, if you have a 10-year-old or younger, they haven't seen a photo album. you know, other than an old photo album that you were a part of. And I've seen it happen where, a little child's with their parent and the parent's opening up a photo album to, because they want to make a photograph, they want to make a copy of an old photograph from an old photo album, that the child will say, "Where's the picture of me?" And there isn't.
I've heard that.
And I want to challenge those of you out there that, you know, where is the picture of your child? Where can they see it? Where will they get that self-esteem that they're looking for if you don't do something about it?
That is a very, very valid point, Frank. I can, through personal experience, relate and understand that situation, the importance of being included.
I believe it.
Right? No question about it. Frank, what you're obviously a highly touted, knowledgeable, professional person. What is it that what makes Frank run? What is it that creates passion in your life?
Hanging out with you. I receive passion from a lot of things. I am a big outdoor photography, anything to do with the sky kind of guy. If it's a cloudy day, I'm looking at the types of clouds. If it's a windy day, how strong is the wind? If it's rainy and stormy, how much rain are we getting out of it? And, you know, how stormy is it really being? I derive a lot of pleasure from my children and my grandchildren when they ask me questions about, you know, hey, Papa, how does this work? And, you know, what is this all about? I derive a lot of joy from those kinds of things. And when a customer walks in the store at Crown Camera and says, "I've got this problem," I'm in it. I mean, my whole heart, soul is in it. So, you know, those are the things that drive me. Those are the things that keep me moving forward all the time.
Well, those are wonderful stimulations, no question about it. So, Frank, is there any parting thoughts that you want to leave our audience?
Sure. I just want to remind people that nothing lasts forever. If you've got an old videotape out there, that VHS tape.
All of us do.
And all of you do. You know, they had a 10-year life. I was married in 1984 to my wonderful wife, Toni, and that original VHS tape no longer exists. There's nothing on it anymore. Luckily, we've made copies over the years, even going off to now DVD. So in the old days, we went from 8mm movie film to VHS. Now we're going from VHS to DVD. We had slides and negs in the old days. Now we're converting those over to CDs and DVDs or into photo books. That's a new thing that we offer at the store. So you can bring in your images, your slides, your negs. We can transfer those to digital and then transfer those to any of a number of wonderful products, calendars, photo books. Personalized photo books are wonderful.
So Crown Camera is the place to get all these older technologies that were used, made into more contemporary methods or medias to show.
Correct.
Frank, what do you foresee in the next biggest change in the photography business for the next 5 years, 10 years?
In the old days, we had film cameras, and then we went to digital. And you still had a camcorder on the left-hand side, and you had a film digital camera on the right-hand side, and then you had your cell phone in the front of you, and you had, you know, this in the back of you. You had all those pieces and parts. Those are all coming together into one unit. A lot of it is your phones now. They call them smartphones because they not only can they take high definition video, but they can also take pictures and they can also record audio and so on and so forth. So those technologies are combining into one unit, and instead of having 14 different pieces to do something, you have one or two. That doesn't mean it's the best product for the job, but it does.
Frank, do you think that there's ever going to be a day where when we're born, they're going to give us a little chip in our brain, and that is going to be the device that is going to control our cell phones, smartphones, videos, and whatever else comes down the pike?
Oh, I'm sure.
You think so?
Oh, gosh, yes. I'm sure somebody's already thought of it, and it's just a matter of time before they're implementing something that, you know, you blink your eye and you just took a picture and it gets recorded to your computer. Mm-hmm. It's amazing what's changed in such a short period of time.
Well, Frank, I want to thank you very much for appearing on our show today. And next week, Trudy will be here. I want to thank everybody for making this show possible, our sponsors, our station owners, our engineering staff, and in particular, Dr. Trudy Pratt and Mark Beacom. I'll be back on April 30th and I've got a wonderful lineup for you. Thank you very much.